I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Please come along and join me for a conversation with the Plummer brothers, Carlos and Kyle, as they share fascinating insights about their incredible journey as Cambria, California-based filmmakers in their new award-winning flick, We Were the Strawberries. Come along and join the conversation.
Hi, my name is Carlos Plummer. I am a local independent filmmaker based out in Cambria, California.
And my name is Kyle Plummer, brother to Carlos, and also a filmmaker living in Cambria, California.
So how did filmmaking start for you guys?
Well, it started when we were very young. I got the bug really early. I saw Star Wars, and I knew that that's what I wanted to do.
Wow. How old were you?
Maybe 3 years old.
Oh, jeez.
And I knew, like, our dad had been in the industry before in L.A. He had done a lot of television work, worked on a lot of crews.
So you've been on sets and whatnot?
No. Actually. By the time they moved out to Cambria, our parents, he had given up that life and decided to start a new life out here in the Central Coast. But then when I started expressing interest, he was like, oh, I can start imparting some basics onto him at least. So he had me, like, do storyboards and actually write a script. And I was like, oh, okay, you actually have to plan this. You can't just, like, imagine it and it happens in live action, like, real time. As we started taking the family camera around and, you know, making little short films with our toys and everything, that's when Carlos started to get involved.
This was a Super 8 or?
Oh, like, family camcorder. And then eventually our parents bought us, like, a true, like, digital camera as a Christmas present 1 year. And that's kind of what got us started.
Did you go to film school?
Pal and I are 4 years apart. And so when Kyle was going through high school, he kind of pursued a lot of this himself, extracurricular activity-wise, and I kind of followed in those footsteps. And so he decided he wanted to go to film school, and we found a quaint little place out in St. George, Utah, actually, which was not where we expected to go, but we found a documentary film festival that screened some of our student films, and they had a film school out at the university where they were screening. And so Kyle kind of fell in love with the school, the campus, the area. It was a very small school. It was growing, and decided he wanted to kind of pursue filmmaking there. It turned into something that was really fruitful for him. It was a very hands-on program. And so from afar, I went through high school at the time, and I got to see him have a lot of success there and realize, you know, I really wanted to, you know, go there as well. And the option was always open to try and pursue, you know, a different school or a different track. But for us, going out of state factor was a big deal. We didn't want to really go down to L.A., and it was just a really immersive program. So we went out there to Utah Tech University. Kyle graduated in 2019, and I graduated in 2023.
Did you work on projects together while you were there at school?
Actually, we didn't get to go to school together. Right when he graduated college, I graduated high school. So we switched places. But when Kyle was in high school, we worked on a lot together. And a lot of the stuff we did was actually documentary filmmaking. Kyle got really involved with the local veterans community out in Cambria with the American Legion. And so a lot of his high school projects were for different competitions and film festivals that were centered around, like, documenting veteran stories. The biggest project that we worked on together before film school was a documentary called Tour of Honor. And it was a feature-length documentary, 2013, that Kyle and our dad embedded on an honor flight and followed the veterans from SLO to Washington, D.C. and documented the whole trip.
That was, like, our first truly feature film project that we worked on. It was a documentary, so that is a different ballpark, a different animal to be dealing with, but it definitely was a great learning experience.
How did you distribute? Who saw it?
Oh, it was all independent, and it was a very small-scale distribution. We actually did a partnership with our local American Legion that they sold DVD copies of it, and we got them in contact with our DVD people, and basically they just had it as a way where you could just fill out a form online and they would just mail you a copy. It was really cool how they supported us.
Did you do showings at the Vets Hall in Cambria and San Luis?
We did all over the county. The biggest one was probably out in Atascadero. At the time it was the Galaxy Theaters, now it's Colony Cinemas. They did a great partnership with us where they screened it twice in one day, and it was sold out both times.
And what made that happen? What did, you know, how did that come about?
Growing up in Cambria, a primarily retired community, you know, young people very often are exposed to a lot of stories that the older people in town would tell, and going to community events and going to events at the local vets hall, community centers, you start to meet these people who all have very interesting stories. And when it got to the time that I was entering these documentary film competitions in high school, I was like, I have so many stories in my backyard and I can just start filming them. And it was a great way to start learning the vocabulary of how to tell a story.
That's so cool. But you went on from there. You've done other projects.
Yeah, I directed a few narrative short films while I was at school. Carlos directed a couple while he was at school. And then we both directed thesis films individually. Mm-hmm. Mine was a 55-minute thriller. Carlos's was a short film, and it was a drama, because at that time in the program, they started limiting the time limits on what you could do. And so, because it was a bigger class size, so they had to accommodate for that. And so after we both graduated, we were really looking forward to discovering new ways in which we could explore. And I graduated in 2019. Carlos graduated in 2023. And in the time between then and now, we have met and connected with so many local people here in the Central Coast that it has really kickstarted us to say, you know what, we have all these short films, we have all these ideas, let's just start doing stuff. We used to have this limitation of we didn't know who we could work with. We didn't know who was in the area. So we always used to feel, well, I can't make that short film because, you know, I don't have any help. Now we do. Now we know where the people are, and they're really generous and wonderful. And we've made a lot of short films primarily through, it's called Micro Horrors, and it's a local film festival that happens in San Luis Obispo, for those listeners that don't know about it yet.
And once again, what's it called?
Micro Horrors. It's a festival where local filmmakers make 5-minute or less horror films, DIY, very low budget, and the point is to celebrate how low budget you can get it and still sell it.
Yeah, make it work.
And it's really cool to see what the community pulls out, because they get so creative and everybody gets so excited about what's your project this year, and then everybody submits it and we screen it outside at Satellite of Love in downtown SLO. Really magical community and great experience all around, but it's created so many relationships.
Oh, just thinking that, you probably met some really interesting people.
Yes, yeah. And it's the reason why we were able to make the feature film that we're screening here at SLO Film Fest.
So here we are in San Luis Obispo. Yeah. The SLO International Film Festival is happening, and you guys have one of your movies that's premiering here.
So we're showing our debut feature film, The Strawberry, which is a narrative drama written by Steve Brody, who lives in Cambria, and the full film was made by a crew of local people. So it is a feature film that employed San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara County residents to work on it. It is a down and dirty independent feature, very small crew, small shooting schedule, small budget, and it's a dramatization of our screenwriter's real life experience with his father's last months alive with pancreatic cancer. And so it deals with a lot of heavy themes and family dynamics and how the family navigates not only a diagnosis, but their father's decision to try and take control of his own life and go out on his own terms.
Was the father able to be filmed?
No. So this happened a few decades ago in the 90s. And so this has been a very personal story for Steve to tell.
Wasn't Brody a psychologist?
He is a psychologist.
I knew him 100 years ago.
Yep. And he's still working, and he wrote a feature that played at the SLO Film Fest last year called Hidden Creek. And so that production team, the co-directors, they were our producers on The Strawberry. So we kind of switched tracks. And
The Strawberry's at a debut here?
It's going to have its California premiere here, yeah. We had our world premiere actually out where we went to school in St. George, Utah at a festival at the top of April, where we won Best Feature and Mike Farrell won Best Actor. So that was pretty exciting. We were very enthused about that. But it's just a natural fit to share it with the SLO audience and, you know, kind of share it with the community that helped build who we are as filmmakers, and we're really excited to do that.
Well, Sundance sounds like a natural, right?
Well, Sundance is something we've never been able to crack. We haven't been able to crack that egg, but definitely, you know, obviously that's the dream, is to get into a big festival like that. But we found a lot of community and success in, you know, a lot of these community-focused festivals, and that's something that SLO has been a big proponent of, is building not only the arts community in the area, but connecting the general public with the filmmaking community. And now with the Central Coast Filmmakers Showcase expanding and growing, and the caliber of films just getting better and better, it's building, you know, an even better name for the filmmakers in the area, and it's something that we're very happy that SLO is willing to do, and it's a phenomenal festival.
So again, this is debut for Strawberry here. Can you show it in Cambria?
We plan to bring the Strawberry back to the Central Coast in a variety of different ways in the next coming months. We are definitely planning some other areas to bring it as well, areas that we know are very popular with Mike Farrell in particular. We also want to try and get it to like some traditional places like LA, Bay Area, just hit the California spots that we know would be really, really cool to share the film. We do want to eventually bring it back to Cambria. We do want to eventually bring it back to Morro Bay. We will have some events coming up that we'll be publicizing more in the future, and people can follow the Strawberry Movie on Instagram. That's where we'll be posting most of the main information about the film coming up.
But you also have the old website, too.
Yeah, the website's under construction, on its way, but we have an Instagram page in the meantime.
So Instagram works the best?
For right now, because it allows us to showcase a lot of the media from the film and have a sort of a hub that people can go and check out the trailers, the awards, and just track the progress of the film as it goes through its post-distribution circuit.
So it's kind of like a juggler in that you're still promoting and working on this, but I know you guys well enough that you've got stuff in your brain that...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we never stop. In fact, right now we have at least two projects in development. They're going to be short films shooting later this year. One I'm writing and directing, and the other one we're helping someone else local to the area produce and make it happen. So we're very excited about both of those. We also try to be as involved as we can with, like, you know, any of the micro horror shoots. We have other friends we help out. So there's always something cooking. We are treating this film, though... We're comparing it to like a band. When a band has like an album that they want to distribute themselves and they book their own tour, we're going to kind of do that with this film, hopefully. And the plan eventually would be to take the film on a roadshow and book it at other theaters and eventually do independent distribution.
Part of the thing is, one thing, being a creative person, artists always suck at finances, right? They're great dreamers and whatnot, but you have to juggle both sides of that. So how do you work on trying to survive?
So what Kyle and I do, we started a post-production company in the area. So we run a full-service editing, color, and sound house. And also we do distribution packaging as well for mainly commercials and smaller projects, short films. We'll be working on a feature later this year doing strictly post-production, which is really fun. So that's kind of our day job, in a sense, is doing a lot of editing, a lot of corporate videos and stuff like that. So that's been some of the more day-to-day type of operations that helps kind of keep us afloat. The filmmaking aspects are more of the dreaming, you know.
Yeah, the creative.
Yeah, and over the past couple of years, just on our professional end, that doesn't involve like our creative work, we've both worked on post-production on short films that have screened at Pasadena Film Festival, have screened at BFI Flare. Just really cool opportunity to sort of be part of these other little sub-communities of filmmakers.
How do you reach out and connect?
You can never figure out when the next connection is going to come. That's why you always have to nurture the ones you have. Prime example being, a lot of these short films that I just spoke about right now actually came about through either one connection or another around here in the area. Primarily our composer, Brooke Monroe, we've worked with him multiple times now. He scored The Strawberry. The soundtrack will be coming out for that soon. Really excited about that.
What's the metaphor music-wise?
I would say it's a highly emotional movie score. It's non-traditional in the sense that it's not going to be like a John Williams score like you might expect. It is very focused on a small group of players that our composer recorded via the internet, where he would book live sessions with these players from across the world and then record them individually and then start working with them in the tracks. In particular, if you watch the film and if you listen to the soundtrack, there's a flugelhorn that is very, very prominent. And it was not something that we were initially even thinking of, but in our like initial spotting sessions, our composer ran us this idea where he was like, hey, I met a guy online who plays flugelhorn. You guys want to hear it? We're like, I don't know. Plays the thing, and we're like, oh, that's that's the movie. That's the heart of it right there. You found it.
That's so cool.
And it's really cool to find a collaborator who can see those things that you can't. Mm-hmm. And that's what we always look for in the people we work with.
I spent time in Nashville, different studio, Zach Brown and whatnot. Yeah. And just like you're saying, it blows my mind. They'll have one guy playing in L.A., another one in New York, and
it's all remote.
Yeah, and it all comes together.
Yeah.
That never could have happened 30 years ago.
Something with the music that was really important to us was making sure that it always worked in tandem with the visuals, mm-hmm. and the visuals didn't overpower the music and vice versa, and that was a conversation we had with the composer. And the performances are the most important part of the film, and it is a very dialogue-heavy film. There's a lot of family crumbling apart element. The actors have a lot of fun working with and against each other, and particularly, you know, showcasing Mike Farrell and his depth of not only experience, but the range of emotion that he brings to this character. Really impressed with our entire cast and how they were all able to mesh together. So with the music, what was really important was understanding that it had to always be an accent, you know, an accentuating part of the film, and something to help drive the story forward and keep the pace alive. And Brooke, our composer, is really coming up in the scene of doing a lot of pretty big projects. He has Strawberry coming out in June, full soundtrack will be releasing. And then there's a film coming out later this year called Dark Arrows, which he did, which is going to be looking to be a pretty big hit in the indie scene. And so it's been really nice to work with him and see him kind of grow along with us and see that collaboration continue to be nurtured.
It's really cool, a little parallel journey, mm-hmm. huh?
Yeah, and he did my high school senior film that I did. It was one of his first non-traditional film scores, and it was a short documentary about Rich Ferguson, a magician who lived here in San Luis, or a mentalist, I should say. And he, the score was a lot of fun to work on. It was my first time working with a composer as well.
How did you meet up?
We met actually here at the Slow Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
We've been doing media for the film festival for about 10 years now. And so it was around 2018 when we met in the festival lounge, and a friend of ours brought him and said, hey, he's a composer. And we just...
Again, his name, and where does he live?
Brooke Monroe, and he's out in Santa Maria right now. And he's been a slow local native for a long time. And so meeting him and collaborating with him was just kind of very natural. We liked the same movies, we talked the same language, and, you know, we liked the same composers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really kind of formed a friendship first and then a collaborative venture. And something else unique about the film is this is the first one we've had where we've had an original song written for the film.
Oh, wow.
And it came by happenstance because we were on set and one of our PAs just asked, can I read the script?
A volunteer who, he's a resident in Cambria and wanted to be involved in the film.
Cool.
His name is Morgan Childers, and he was a PA on set for a couple days, said, can I read the script? The performances I'm seeing are very moving, and he just wanted to know the story. And so when we gave him a copy, and then 3 days later, we got an email, and he said, hey guys, I just whipped up this demo of a song I wrote inspired by the script, if you'd like to hear it. And we were very moved by it. It was a really well written, very thoughtful piece, and so we knew immediately that we had a credit song, you know. And so we were able to collaborate with him and Brooke and create a really cool piece that plays at the end of the film. And it was just one of those beautiful lightning strike moments.
Yeah.
Where it's you never know who you're gonna meet and who's gonna be a good collaborator and someone that really wants to help.
Part of what we do, as you know, is giving back and sharing. Do you ever go to the high school and engage with the kids?
Not yet, but we are, Carlos and I personally didn't go to the high school in Cambria, but we're very, connected with a lot of people who did. And actually, the Coast Union Film Program has shown support to, especially our producers, because they went to school there. They supported them a lot on Hidden Creek, which was the other film that was made in Cambria that Darian and Julian directed. And then there was, just some peripheral support on this project as well as we always hit up the print shop there.
That's really cool. So it's on your hit list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something else we do is we are part of a nonprofit called the Central Coast Film Society.
Uh-huh.
And through our involvement with that organization, there is a program that happens every May, which is a scholarship program for high schoolers. So every May we give out a number of cash scholarships to high school seniors or juniors that make films in their school filmmaking programs. And they're judged by a jury of filmmaking professionals, and they get to screen at a red carpet event, black tie event, and it's a lot of fun for them. So
in Cambria?
All around the county. Okay. So we screen in SLO. Cambria has since shuttered the film program just due to lack of interest and attendance, but we've gotten a lot of submissions from SLO High, Central Coast New Tech, Rigetti High School, Royal Grande, and Morro Bay have been our biggest competitors. So it's been a lot of fun to see the students grow in a really strong way and be engaged with filmmaking and want to be a part of it. Because in our work with the Cal Poly students, what we've known is, they're very hungry, despite there not being a traditional film program at the school, they're very hungry to do stuff. And at the SLO Film Fest, they screen the Cal Poly short films every year, and it's really cool to see them all come together. They get to have their red carpet moment and show their films and their hard work. And a lot of that is just homegrown, and they do that really all themselves in a few of their classes, but also a club that's just growing and growing and growing. And that makes us happy because we didn't have that when we were growing up. Very little film community here of students. And so Darian and Julian are producers on The Strawberry. We grew up with them in Cambria. And I didn't know they were into film until we worked on a feature that shot out there in 2021. And we said, hey, we should work together sometime. And then Hidden Creek kind of came. We worked on their set. When The Strawberry came along, they asked if we wanted to direct. And it's been a very natural, fruitful collaboration.
Just want to reemphasize the fact that we grew up with a lot of these people, and it's been very cool to see the community support. There was a lot of community support while making The Strawberry, whether it be people donating spaces to house cast. The cast was the only element we brought in from out of the area, because obviously Mike Farrell lives in LA. We have a bit player in Doug Jones, who's a prominent, Hollywood actor, been in The Shape of Water, Pan's Labyrinth, Fantastic Four, like a bunch of big movies.
Hi, I'm Doug Jones. I'm an actor who happens to show up in the movie The Strawberry.
Which was filmed in
Cambria, California, yeah, which is a place that my wife and I love to vacation. So when producers Darian and Julian, I was working with them on another project. I'm like, yeah, we're producing another movie up and we shoot in Cambria. I'm like, you do? We love going there. So if you got a part for a mailman, let me know. And they called me 2 weeks later and said, we got a part for a doctor. I'm like, that's even better.
So the brothers found
you? So then that's when I met the brothers, the plumbers. When you're walking into a situation where there's two directors, you never know how it's going to go, because you think, okay, this is a ripe setting for arguments. But I'll tell you what, Kyle and Carlos work together really, really well as a team. They share the same brain when it comes to filming.
That works good.
Yeah, it works really well.
A little bit about you. You have a pretty amazing background.
Well, I'm this June marks my 40th anniversary as an actor. So that's included hundreds of titles, including lots of Guillermo del Toro films like Mimic, Pan's Labyrinth, Shape of Water, Hellboy 1 and Hellboy 2, and Crimson Peak. And I've also been on television series like Star Trek Discovery and What We Do in the Shadows as recurring or series regular characters. And
how did it all start for you? Did you know you'd wind up in this world?
I didn't know I was going to wind up wearing monster and creature suits and rubber bits glued onto me. But I really came out to Hollywoodland from Indiana back in 1985 thinking, I'm going to be a sitcom star. I just wanted to be a goofy next-door neighbor on a sitcom that when I watched Gilligan's Island and Gomer Pyle or Dick Van Dyke or anything Jerry Lewis did or Danny Kaye, those were my heroes. And I thought, well, if those tall, lanky guys can be goofy on camera, maybe I can too. So that's what I thought I was headed for.
What was the shift?
I have a mime background, and with a mime background and also being 6'3 and 135 pounds and being flexible to the point where I can put contortionist on my resume, that marked me as a guy who can wear rubber creature suits without my knowing it, right? So a lot of the roles I went up for in my early days involved physical tomfoolery of some sort, and with physical roles that they ask for mimes or clowns or specialty in movement, that often comes with a look that has to be glued on to you. That's where you meet the creature effects guys. So that's how I got started.
Talk to us about The Shape of Water for a moment.
The Shape of Water. Well, of all the movies I've ever been in my life, that might be a favorite because I'm a romantic at heart. And that has a lovely romance story that is quite unusual. It's a unique love story between a mute cleaning lady and a fish man from the wild. But only Guillermo del Toro can put a movie like that together and make it work. And so when he told me about that story, I was like, oh, you're the only one who can do this. When he told me the story, I said, this is your next trip to the Oscars. Well, 3 years later, when we were sitting at the Oscars with 13 nominations, I called it.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Back to the Plummer Brothers for a moment. Yeah. And the film that you did in Cambria. Talk to us about what resonated with you and what is most memorable.
Well, the story itself, when I read the script, I wiped a tear at the last page and said, oh my gosh, I have to be in this. Now, my role as the doctor is small. I bookend the movie. I'm the beginning and the end of the film. I play the lead character's family doctor. What I like about this is that when you're giving an end-of-life prognosis to someone, that medical professional becomes a part of the family for that last chapter of their life, whether they like it or not, whether the family wants you or not, you're there. So you want to be an empathetic, hand-holding, good bedside manner member of the family. I had a lot to channel with that, even in my two scenes that I had.
Mike Farrell was in the movie?
Mike Farrell, yes, and the chance to work with him. As a kid, I grew up watching MASH every week, and B.J. Honeycutt was an iconic character played by Mike Farrell. So getting to meet him now in my adult years as a peer, he was just an absolute genuine dream to work with. Gracious, kind, and he shared the camera very well and had great ideas, you know, tweaking this or that while you're in the moment. He had great instincts, he's earned them over many years of being on camera. So to work with a seasoned pro like that is like, oh, it's just delicious.
And on the other end of the spectrum, a little bit more on the brothers, because they're young, you know, and they're have that innocence.
The Plummer Brothers' young innocence is also laced with creativity. They started making films, from what I understand, when they were kids with, like, camcorders. Yeah. And that is, I find those are the ones that make the best movies, the ones who had an imagination and knew what to do with it as kids, and it only developed and grew and snowballed over time. And that's exactly what you can see with them. Now that I've seen The Strawberry, I'm like, wow, okay, so this wasn't their first time holding a camera ever. This is the work of people who knew how to tell a visual story, a sentimental story, a poignant story that has that's a conversation starter too. The subject matter of this movie too is what really grabbed me. I've known four people in my life that have made an end of life decision for themselves like this. A couple in Canada and one that went to Switzerland. And so it was kind of close and near and dear to me because the last one that did this was about, you know, a year and a half ago. So when I was offered this, I'm like, oh my gosh, your feelings go back and forth on this. Like, you know, God brings us into the world, God takes us out, but then you can't blame people that are in a certain terminal situation to save their family the anguish and expense and to save themselves the pain that they might go through. I mean, like, I get it. This movie was so beautifully written. Steve Brody, our writer, psychologist who has been through this with his own dad. So, oh my gosh, it was written with such empathy and such clarity on the topic. And it didn't preach one way or another what decision you're supposed to make. It just preached you can make your own decision. And it's up to you, all the variables. The whole issue of selfishness comes up in this movie a lot. Like, is it selfish to stay alive? Is it selfish to take yourself out? Who's being selfish? Is it selfish for the family to want you to stay alive when you know the end is near? It doesn't really come to any conclusion on what's right or wrong. It's a conversation starter that makes you want, okay. And it does make us all reflect on, if it were me in that same situation, yeah, what would I do, right?
Sobering, huh?
Sobering, and it's very sobering. And I'm 65 now, so the closer I get to that, it's like, okay, got to start thinking about this. Got to put this on paper.
Yeah. To learn more about your world, you live down in L.A. still, right? Mm-hmm. But I imagine you may be moving to Cambria.
Moving to Cambria would be dreamy. Yeah, I love the Central Coast in general. Anyway, it's when you walk down the streets of a city like San Luis Obispo or Cambria, you feel like you're in a Hallmark Christmas movie, and I love those. Yeah. So perfect.
Well, I live in Morro Bay.
Yeah,
I moved there in the '70s, and it's basically the same.
Yeah,
the movie theater was built by the Navy in World War II.
Right, exactly. And it's, you don't want to see it go out of business, so you support the local vendors and businesses, right?
Okay, to learn more about your world.
I'm all over the social medias. If you could go to Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, now X, Blue Sky, LinkedIn, Tumblr, you can find me at Actor Doug Jones. All run together, no punctuation, at Actor Doug Jones, and that's, I'll always tell you what's coming up next for me.
What works best for you? Instagram?
Instagram's the one that I'm probably most active on, I think, yeah. But I'm on all of them. And my name is Doug Jones.
Doug, thank you so much, man. Yeah. What a pleasure to meet you and the brothers.
Thank you for having me, yeah.
He comes from L.A., so those people had to be shuttled in, housed, and wonderful, generous people in the town, you know, gave us their homes or bed and breakfasts or, you know, really, really supportive. So again, film made with support from the community, and we're just really excited to give it back to the community.
And a little bit more about Farrell. You got to hang out with him. And
yeah.
How was that?
Well, he is just the most wonderful human being around. He really lives up to his reputation of just being really, really great person to work with and a really great person to know personally. All the other actors who interact with him, I mean, they all come away learning something because he's just a wealth of experience and knowledge, but also just personality. We knew when we brought him on that it was going to mean our film went into SAG territory, and we were ready for that. We knew what that meant, and our producers did a wonderful job, you know, getting the money to make that happen. Still small amount, but it was definitely more than what we initially anticipated. It was a great learning experience for us because we've never done something like that. And we wanted to do it right because we wanted to do it right for Mike. We knew that was going to be something he was passionate about, and we wanted to respect that. You know, one of our leads who plays one of the sons, Josh Garrett, he plays Alan in the film. The first time he's worked on a set ever. He was from Santa Barbara. He had done a couple, you know, modeling gigs, sent in an audition tape, and was like, hey, I kind of want to try my hand at this. He was great, and we loved him right away. And he came in, and Mike was absolutely blown away by him, going, this guy is not an amateur. He's a professional. Prominent local actor Abe Lincoln really had a great time bonding with Mike on set. And what was cool is seeing Josh and Abe both form relationships with Mike that they still maintain today, you know, after the shoot. That part's just really special. Also, want to give a quick shout out to Yvette Lee Sanchez, who plays Mariana in the film. She, you know, kind of comes in, and it's a pretty male dominant film, and she really holds her own. And so far in some of the screenings, there have been a lot of people who have come to us and said that she's the heart of the film. Like, she really, really supports a lot of the emotional way of the film, and that she's one of the favorite characters. So also want to give her a shout out too.
I think for me, working with Mike, well, we, like Kyle said, we initially didn't anticipate to, you know, go the SAG route, specifically working with a name actor. It was something we thought about. And
did you basically have to do that?
Yes and no. And it was one of those things where we wanted to cast locally. We were pretty passionate about that. We just realized, you know, we didn't have the breadth of senior actors here that wanted to really, you know, really give their time. And so we knew we had to cast the net wider. And that's when the conversation started of thinking about attaching a name to the film. Because also our producers were thinking, you know, a notable actor can get more interest in the film. You get more people interested in supporting and going to see it when it comes out. We're like, okay, yeah, that's fair. And that's when Steve approached us and said, I know Mike Farrell. Do you want me to send him the script? And at first we were hesitant specifically because of the budget. And, you know, we didn't want to appear like a ragtag group of filmmakers just lowballing this guy. And, you know, we didn't want to look bad. And so,
but that didn't happen.
Basically, what happened was we all convened and we said, well, you know what, let's meet him. Let's go and talk to him. And so we went down to Burbank around at the end of 2023. Met at this cute little cafe. He came walking in. He was definitely trying to suss us out. He was like, these young guys, who are these guys? He had met Darian and Julian, our producers, one time, and obviously he knew Steve very well. They went way back. And so he definitely was willing to hear us out. And he had read the script. He said he liked the script a lot. He liked the character. He had some like notes about the story beats and like what he would bring to the story and bring to the table. He was more concerned than anything about the supporting players, and he wanted to make sure that he was going to, like, you know, vibe with them and perform well with them, and that he wasn't going to have to carry all the weight. And and he didn't want to be like, okay, this is Herb's movie, the main character, this is his movie, but he doesn't want it to be like, I'm just, you know, here's Mike and then here's all the other people, you know. He wants it to be a collaboration. And so the other thing he told us was that he's gotten very used to working on a lot of more modern, like, student sets and independent sets in LA, where they attach him to something just to get the name on a film, and they use him for a day and they say, okay, say your lines, and then you're gone. He said he hasn't really had that much fulfilling work besides a couple bit parts on some shows that he's had a good time on. And so when we told him, well, that's not how we work. Like, if we're in it, we're in it 110%. We told him about our kind of bohemian style crew, you know, just kind of very small, intimate crew settings with, we just call it, like, bohemian is definitely the best way to call it because it's, you know, it's very unorthodox styles of filmmaking. And we do apply, like, the same level of professionalism and etiquette that, you know, you would expect from any set. But the goal is that no one's going to overshadow another and that it's a true team effort. We value each other. We respect each other. And we work together for the same common goal. And he was very impressed with that. And he was really interested. Actually took him a bit longer after that to actually get attached to the project, and we didn't talk to him until about a couple weeks before filming. And so it was one of those things where we, you know, kind of in and out, we didn't really know if he was fully on board, and then he attached around like February and he said I'm game. So we, you know, had to get the paperwork going and all that, and so our producers handled that. And it was kind of surreal working with him, not because of like the star factor or like, you know, the experience factor, but more the amount of knowledge he had about not only the character but what he wanted to bring to the other actors and what he wanted to bring to the story. And I think it really helped us as directors learn a lot from someone like him. And I was really looking to learn from this film. You know, I'm not coming into it going, I'm a know-it-all filmmaker. Yeah, I know everything about this, you know.
And so a major bonus for you guys, right?
Yeah. And drama is not my fortitude. Like, I'm more of a genre filmmaker. I lean more into, like, sci-fi drama or horror thriller. That's more kind of my storytelling vibe. But this story was very resonant to us, and we saw it as a really great opportunity to, you know, try and do something meaningful. He just made the experience so much more worth it.
So what's on the horizon for you guys?
Right now, Kyle mentioned we have a couple short films. One is a larger scale. I'll let you talk about it. But I'm currently finishing a treatment for a thriller, like a slasher thriller feature, but more kind of in the vein of like a coming of age story. Not a splatterfest, but definitely something a little more thoughtful.
Do you try and film on location on the Central Coast whenever possible?
Yeah, that's very important to me, is actually highlighting the Central Coast, especially in this film I want to make, as well as a couple other shorts that we'll probably be making this year, and I'll let you talk about yours.
Yeah, actually, that's a great point about the locations, because with all the projects we have coming up, I think there's a big emphasis on making sure that the locations are here. My short that I'm going to be developing for later this year is sort of it's a dark fantasy, definitely like a fantasy horror kind of hybrid. Well, I really want to showcase a lot of the natural spaces around here. In particular, there's a lot of spaces out in Cambria where we live, where, I mean, we've hiked these trails for years growing up, and it's just spurred my imagination to be like, you know what, I have to do something with this. I have to get it on film before I, you know, forget it and lose it. And then the other thing is with like these other projects with, you know, Carlos's ideas for future project, with these other projects we're helping develop, everybody's very excited about setting them here and trying to find ways to make it work here.
Central Coast.
And I think what's been really cool is there's even a filmmaker we know who's trying to do like a Western, and he wants to shoot it on film, and he wants to shoot out in Santa Maria. It's like he wants to do it here, and that's great. That's awesome. I know we want to do something at some point that ends up kind of being like a true love letter to the area. That would be like a real dream project, is to do a film that can really showcase the culture of what this area is like. That would be awesome, because there's only one group of people that can do it, and it's the people that live here.
That's so cool. You know, and it takes going away from the area and coming back, and then you have that fresh eye where you go, wow, we are so blessed. Where I live in Morro Bay, I can be up and seeing the sea lions north of you after work.
On that note, like, we're here at the Slow Film Fest, and it's really striking me every year when we're at a film festival, any film festival, and you see these films from people from the areas they live. And it's great because you get a perspective on what their life is like. Every time we include a location here in one of our projects, we hope that that's like a little tiny slice of, you know, something someone else can go, oh, that's a new experience for me.
Yeah. I think for me, like, The Strawberry was entirely shot on location in Cambria. We weren't able to utilize like a lot of like the outdoor like beauty of the area besides one very specific sequence. Well, two sequences utilize the ocean and the beachfront. It was very important to us because when they made Hidden Creek, that was filmed on location on all the Fiscalini ranch areas, as well as some of the Hearst properties, and then showcasing some of downtown Cambria. So for us, it was very important to show more of the kind of like homestead area of Cambria and some of the neighborhoods and the way the trees weave in and out of the homes and all that. And that was really, you know, fun treat to film on those, in those houses. And, you know, a lot of the locations kind of just fell in our laps luckily, but it was really cool to go in a lived-in space and utilize it, as opposed to having to like build something from scratch or really dress it up. And living in Cambria, we actually have a very strong connection to location filming because we live in one of the houses that was featured in Arachnophobia. That movie that filmed out there in 1989, we actually talked to the production designer recently, and he was telling us the story of how they found Cambria, and they wanted it to be like a Pacific Northwest town. And then they couldn't film up there because of the weather at the time. And he lived in Los Osos at the time. So he said, hey, let's go to the coast. Yeah. He was thinking actually Morro Bay at first. But then they said, it's a little too close to the beach. Let's do something more like foresty. So they found Cambria.
And then there's that home down the street, kind of Victorian, that was in the movie.
Yes. Yeah. That one in Main Street. That's where the mortician works. Mm-hmm. We live in the house where the mortician lived. So with the Wheel of Fortune scene and the spider and the popcorn. That's our house, inside and out, and the stove that he cooks popcorn on, it's still there, it still works, because it's too heavy to move. So the house is really cool, it's still the same color, that nice baby blue. It's really fun to know that, you know, location filmmaking is viable, and a lot of the people we know are game for it. And like Kyle said, it's very important to us to showcase the area in less of a, hey, look how beautiful it is here, and, you know, and more of a, hey, people live here, and it's worth it. It's a really deep place to live.
And just one last thing about Central Coast and locations, just a quick shout out to some of the other Central Coast films that we were either peripherally involved with. There was one, it was called The Cover-Up. Our good friend Tala directed that, and our DP on our film, The Strawberry, also DP'd that short film. And again, it's just kind of a testament to how this same crew of people really is collaborative, and we all help each other with each other's projects. And that was a great short film because that was a great exercise in locations. If you go see that film, you'll see a ton of different locations around the Central Coast, a lot of them in Morro Bay, but another great way to be like, hey, here's the Central Coast on film.
To learn more about The Strawberry and to see more of like when it's going to be coming to theaters, when it's going to be screening in the area, right now go to the Instagram, which is The Strawberry Movie. You just search it up there. The website should be up and running within the next couple weeks, and that'll have all the latest updates as well. To find our work, you can go to our website, superimageltd.com. And our collaborators, Darian and Julian, are Slabtown Studios. My name is Carlos Plummer.
My name is Kyle Plummer, and you can also find Superimage LTD and Slabtown Studios on all social media as well. You can just search those names. We should pop up. My name is Kyle Plummer, and yeah, this has been wonderful.
Thank you guys so much. So, or they can run into you on Main Street down in Cambria.
Yep.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.